I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
It's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's world service.
And I said, I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. You can understand that, can't you?
Yes.
Good lad.
So he's almost like having a second captain in the team.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
It was one of the great early season GAA Championship weekends. Jim McGuinness taking down Derry, Mickey Hart, and the entire concept of the sweeper-keeper all in one fell swoop. Cavan pushing Tyrone all the way in an extra time classic. Limerick roaring back to beat Clare in the hurling. Waterford blowing the Munster Championship wide open with a dramatic win against Cork. And as you would expect, our GAA correspondent was in the coalface, right in the thick of the action. Welcome to the show. Hey, fellas.
Hey, Owen. How's it going?
Why don't you tell everyone where you were, Murph? Which one of these incredible sporting occasions were you attending at the weekend?
I was, obviously, at Waterford against Clare in the Munster Senior Football Semi-Final in Fraher Field, Dungarvan, on Saturday evening.
The big one.
The big one, Owen. Possibly, I'm going to say yes. Well, I mean, Galway Carlow was pretty terrible, and Kilkenny Antrim didn't have a lot for the neutral. So, I mean, it wasn't the only whitewash in an otherwise amazing weekend of GAA action.
I am reading a bit from the match where Clare made it back-to-back Munster finals with a routine 14-point win over Waterford. The Deja will now play in the Tailteann Cup.
Yeah, that's basically all that happened.
You
have
got family connections down there, so I'm going to say it is.
I was down in Waterford for a good part of the week last week. I was literally driving through Dungarvan at 5:30. The game was fixed for a 6 p.m. start, and that's when I decided to go to the game. So I went to the game, and I was glad that I went to the game. Owen, I would have felt guilty if, you know, Waterford had won two Munster Championship games back to back, and I had literally driven directly past the stadium rather than go in. So the fact that that didn't happen doesn't mean that I wasn't right at 5:30 on Saturday when I decided, no, I'm going to go into this. I've got Derry and Donegal recorded. I will be able to watch that anyway. Let's just go to the game. Let's see what happens. What happened was Clare dominated the early exchanges. They dominated the exchanges in the middle part of the game. And then at the end of the game, they were dominating the exchanges. But listen, Owen, that's not important. What's important is that I showed up.
Nothing beats coming home to Waterford.
Literally, like, Simon took the word right out of my mouth.
There he is.
That's absolutely correct. So, listen, there are a lot of weekends in the GAA season. You know, maybe I made the wrong decision this weekend. But that's not to say. All it does, actually, is make it more likely I'll make the right decision next weekend.
That's the way to look at it. Hurling chat on the way tomorrow with Jamie and Mal for World Service members. Sign up now for €5 a month plus VAT on secondcaptains.com. We're chatting to Michael Murphy today, who was at a couple of big games. He was in Derry on Saturday.
He's just better at me than that.
He was also at the Cavan Tyrone match.
When it comes to choosing these games.
Yesterday. What an occasion that was, the Derry Donegal game. Firstly, before we talk about the sweeper keeper thing, what is it? McGuinness 4,
yes.
Hart 0.
Yeah.
In championship meetings between the pair now.
Yeah, and McGuinness, you know, has always talked about how Mickey Hart was the guy he had to take down when he took over the Donegal job, and he just targeted Tyrone and Mickey Hart from the second he became the Donegal manager. And so that was, whatever it was, 13 years ago, nearly 14 years ago, and his record stands at 4-0, which is pretty incredible. Yeah. I mean,
Mickey Hart has been managing pretty strong. Like, Tyrone were still pretty strong when Donegal first burst on the scene. And this Derry team are shit hot and won the league, and are many people, including Michael Murphy's tip for the All-Ireland. So,
yeah. But like, you can imagine my surprise, let's say, when I turned on Radio 1, having left Fraherfield, and to have heard the scoreline of 4-9 to 11 points. Like, what the hell has happened here? But, and again, it's not just kind of Donegal win a squeaker. It was genuinely, parts of the game were breathtaking to watch. And I watched it back at 11:30 on Saturday night, and my breath was still taken away by some of the stuff I saw, to be honest. It was an incredible watch. Because, you know, you just get used to, you know, we were used to the idea for 130 years that the goalkeeper stands in between the two goalposts and he kicks the ball out and he saves any of the shots that are in that area, and that's him.
And he occasionally turns around to exchange barbs with the fans, the away fans behind him. And
that's, or the umpires or whatever, but that's fine. That was the full extent of the role. And then in the last kind of 4 or 5 years, we see goalkeepers kicking points from play. We see them sallying up the field without a care in the world. We see them playing as basically quarterbacks. And increasingly, we see goalkeepers walk out to the middle of the field to block up space for kickouts. Now, you said that it's the end of the sweeper-keeper. I mean, I still feel like keepers will be coming out and getting involved in open play. But this idea of keepers coming out and standing in the middle of the field for kickouts. Shane Ryan was doing it
for the other team's kickouts. This is what we're talking about here. So the other team is lining up a kickout. The goalkeeper leaves their goals to basically just provide an extra body and maybe put the opposing goalkeeper off kicking the ball into that area, and thereby dictating essentially what the other goalkeeper is going to do. That's the idea of having the
That's the idea. You know, like Dublin used to do it with Jason Sherlock, who was the Mayor of Foreigner at the time. Mm-hmm. So that is basically where the idea came from. That Jason Sherlock used to just like not leave the field, stand about 20 yards in from the Dublin dugout. And people were like, is that a Dublin player? He's wearing blue. Maybe best not kick it out there. So when they put a stop to that, they decided, well, maybe we could move the keeper up. Teams did. So Oran Lynch has been doing it for a couple of years. Like, Oran Lynch conceded a goal, you know, to Galway and Damien Comer in the 2022 All-Ireland Final, where Comer kicked it into an empty net from 35 yards out. Oran Lynch was like jogging back 65 yards out when the goal went in. So, I mean, this is not exactly a new experience for Oran Lynch, to see balls like flying over his head, or indeed to be caught ahead of the ball as the ball is going into his own net. So, but it actually took players to take on the initiative to, well, Sean Patton obviously has like a cannon for a boot. Like, he kicked the ball an extraordinary distance. But this is not a secret. Derry knew how big Sean Patton's kickout was. They did it anyway. They were caught once. They were caught a second time. And they were caught a third time.
Did you see these kind of views? Watch this.
Yeah, I saw it, yeah.
What do you think? Get a wriggle on there, Oran. Maybe sprint back a little faster for the first one in particular.
I was a bit surprised. I mean, it didn't look to me as though there was any danger of him getting lobbed. So I was a bit surprised to see that he still did manage to get lobbed.
Yeah.
Did you see Jose Mourinho today in the Daily Telegraph talking about this?
No. Well, you've written about basically teams being decided to be incredibly risk averse, except with your goalkeeper, who's by a mile your worst.
Well, look, this is Jose Mourinho. He's a, you know, it's, to be fair, I'm a bottom feeder. He's a guy who's won a lot of trophies. Okay. And he says...
you're occasionally readable.
Well, he says... frequently readable is better.
Yeah, frequently readable is better. Shit.
frequently readable. Who was that again? One of your journalistic...
rivals. No, don't worry about it. We don't need to put a name in it. I got away with it the first time. Let's not run that gauntlet again.
Okay. No, Jose he has obviously been having some time away from the game, and his brain, in between being bitter at people for overpraising Arsenal for parking the bus... Mm. Oh, the way the media went on as though it was a magic strategy. In my day, we call that parking the bus. This is Arsenal against City. But he's also been thinking of new approaches to the game. And he tells Sam Wallace in the Daily Telegraph that what's actually going to happen is the goalkeeper is going to be replaced by an 11th outfield player. He's like, why are we doing this? We're playing with goalkeepers in midfield anyway. and they're shit. Why not do that with a proper player?
So basically what Kieran McGeaney did with Ethan Rafferty 2 years ago.
Without a change of rules, though. So you'd still need that goalkeeper to make saves.
You've got the rules. One of the players on your team can be the goalkeeper. They can wear the gloves if they
last
want.
Last man back. Well,
one player. Yeah, although...
No, it's the same man.
Only
it's
one player is allowed to handle the ball. Handle the ball at all. Mourinho is adamant it will happen. Why do you play with a goalkeeper, even if he's good with his feet, almost in the midfield? If you can do that with a proper player, I can see that substitution happening. And the coach who does it will be considered a genius.
Well, this is, Kieran McGeaney, take a bow, because you were doing it before before it was even a glint in Jose Mourinho's eye.
I do think the best goalkeepers, like Ederson, could probably do a job in midfield.
Ederson, one of the most impressive things I saw last week in football was Ederson's penalty.
Yeah.
Jesus, that was good. how can he kick the ball so solidly?
I feel like keepers are getting better because, you know, from a younger and younger age, they're practicing like that now all the way up.
Dean Henderson, of course.
The best goalkeeper. So I suppose, football. Yeah, Dean Henderson, he had an absolute header, didn't he?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and the Blackburn keeper. Sammy Smodics keeps scoring goals and then Blackburn just keep, well... It's not too good. And then there was the one last week, was the garbage, the Brighton-Burnley game.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Like, ridiculous. Nonsense.
So, you know, this idea that you can give goalkeepers more responsibilities than the responsibilities I outlined at the start of the show, you know...
Get back in your goals, goalkeepers.
Just stand there and save the shots you have to save and kick the ball out and shut the hell up.
A big schmazzle just in front of the Kerry goal. Bit of a dust up, folks, in the left corner back position. The physio's involved out there now, is she, from Mayo, look?
He is, yeah.
Stewards now, is she, are pulling off a spectator.
A spectator after coming in. A spectator and
three,
four stewards. That's
crazy stuff, isn't it?
That's crazy stuff, yeah.
You don't want to see that, like.
And I tell you, it's taken 5, 1, 2, 3, 4 stewards to hold him and bring him back.
He's a strong man, isn't he?
Here's Colin McFadden. Colin McFadden's got Ryan McKee. The ball's over there. The ball's over there. Ryan McKee.
The kick out again in an absorbing semi-final. Anthony Maher brings it down from the cloud.
He half passes over to Colin McFadden. This is the goal for Donegal. Yes! Colin McFadden.
Tight angle. Paul Gainey with the kick. And Paul Gainey with the point.
We're watching to see what McQuillan's going to do. Donegal. Donegal are back in an All-Ireland final.
And the referee says it's all over.
What an absolutely amazing result by Kerry. What wonderful football by the Kingdom. Up Kerry, up the Kingdom, up Eamon Fitzmaurice, up to Dublin for the All-Ireland.
Some game.
Michael Murphy was in Derry for what was an enjoyable Saturday evening, I'd imagine, Michael.
A beautiful sunny, lovely Saturday evening finished off lovely with a beautiful Donegal one.
What was it like as that was unfolding? I mean, it must have been a magic night for any Donegal player, ex-player, fan.
Yeah, just it was phenomenal. Left to try to get in there a couple hours beforehand now. Had Neil Gallagher, Eamon McGee, and then two club mates in with me. They went in and sampled some of the finest Derry hospitality.
Sorry, so this is all in your car.
Yeah,
you were basically the designated driver because you were on national television, and also all of these lads decided to bunk in with you to go on the beer in Derry for the evening.
Nicely put. Yeah. They were so they came in. So it was it was a squash car, but it was brilliant. Yeah, they went in and they went off up the street for a little couple of samplers before the game, and just the game was incredible. The weather was brilliant. Packed house for the first time in a long time. I think I've been in a GA ground that's been packed for the first time, which was brilliant. Derry's just a great little atmosphere. Then the game. And the one, and then the way back out in the car was brilliant. It was just a great evening.
You've been making the point that you can't expect too much from the first year of McGuinness being back in, that Derry have been at this for a long time and Donegal are just having to sort of restart under McGuinness. So that said, are you shocked at how sudden this impact was, that he's got another one over at Mickey Hart, that he's beaten the league champions Derry, and that he's basically taken apart the whole notion of the sweeper keeper all in one game of football?
I'm not shocked at the impact, not one bit. Again, you know, it's been repeated and repeated and repeated since like last October, November when this draw was made. Every single night in Convoy would have been repeated and repeated and repeated and spoken and about Derry, about Derry, about Derry. And you could just see, even as the game was going on, the players, I could just see them seeing the pictures. They were saying, right, yeah, that's what we did on that Tuesday in December. Oh, right, that was January. Oh, yeah, there's February. You know, you could just see the belief and the confidence they had within it, you know, because the work was done. It was done so focused and so clear. What I was surprised was with how Derry, their inability to handle it. They just look punch drunk. They look absolutely no ideas, no just ability to even reset. That half time, they got a couple of points just before half time to bring it back to a 1-point game when they were played off the pitch in the first half, outside of the opening 10 minutes where Derry went 3-1 up. I thought, right, half time, Derry will reset, they'll find the answers. But it was just like they were stunned by it. It was nearly like they got caught in the web of it, and maybe some of their players started to believe maybe there is something about this, and that because we're just caught up in it, they didn't do anything different. I think the kickouts have been played out so far since the game, but I think the kickouts underlined the lack of change or any, you know, different tactical ploy that was brought to the game. They just kept doing the same kick out over and over again, press high. But there was just no tweaks to the Derry system.
We spent a good portion of last week talking about Wicklow and going for goals when the keeper is out. But we had no idea that it would be the central plank of another weekend's football. I mean, tell us exactly how Jim McGuinness targeted Oran Lynch and what he would have seen coming into the game and how he then exploited that in the game on Saturday.
I think, like, I keep using the terms and hammer the hammer. Donegal looked at Derry's strengths being their middle eight, which is just energetic, it's defensively solid, it's score getting. And Donegal just didn't say, right, how do we wrestle this to a draw with this middle eight? How do we manage and how do we just hold these middle eight? We're actually going to tick his on and dismantle it. And one of the ways they did that is via the kick out. So Derry actually got, firstly, we'll start, Derry got exactly what they wanted in the kick out. They pressed high, stopped it going short. They got it kicked out long on top of their two big midfielders, the players that they want underneath the breaks, the players that are going to take the mantle over from, supposedly from Fenton, from all these boys. They got the balls kicked out on top of Rodgers and Glass. Donegal competed harder out the back, and then on the ground, Ryan McHugh, Darrell Boyle, you know, Keelan McGonigal, Patter Mogan, they swept underneath them breaks hungrier than the Derry players, and they did it over and over again, and they got the rub of the green from some of the breaks, but they did that from the goals over and over again. So to me, Donegal targeted, they looked, here's another one of your strengths, which is pressing up in the kick out, and we're going to dismantle that too. So they looked at the strengths and said, we're not going to try and tiptoe around them. We're going to front up to them, and we're going to actually try and beat you at your strengths.
With the keeper in particular, though, it was extraordinary to watch it, because it has been one of the tactical evolutions of the last few seasons in the GA that they're used as playmakers. They're out the field. To see it kind of fall apart like that seemed quite shocking to watch, and yet quite obvious at the same time. Of course, if a goalkeeper's going to come running out like that, if the kickouts go the wrong way, or if the breaking balls go the wrong way off the kickouts, they're going to be in a bit of bother.
I did see it with Oran, especially in the league final against Dublin. And I noticed when Dublin had won a few of the kickouts, it kind of reminded me of nearly like a matador, nearly like he was jogging back and saying, actually, a good way for us to win here, or a good way for us to get the ball back once you have it, is actually go and have a go, because I don't think you're able to do it, you know. So it's nearly like he's dandering back, saying, go on, have a go. But Darrell Whale had a go. He whipped the ball up. It's a hard enough skill to do, like get that ball up and over and get it down in time before it hits the goal. So he done it, and he, you know, done it to aplomb, you know. But also on the Oran Lynch one, for this kick out to work, if he's standing on one side of the pitch, especially on the fourth one, when the ball actually did rain down on top of him, Brendan Rodgers and Jason McGee, you need the players on the other side of the pitch to do his job for him, you know. So like, a lot of the blame will be there towards Oran Lynch, but the other Derry players also need to try and rush back to help. This isn't just a one-off goalkeeper job. Yeah, people say it is, just stay back in your goal. But it is much more of a team effort there in that. And again, just to keep going back to it, that signified to me, yeah, getting beaten the kick out. But after the second one, surely to God, you say to yourself, we need to change this. And that goes back to the theory that I just thought Derry were punch drunk. They just couldn't come up with another ploy or another setup to just say, right, this isn't working today, let's try and just manage this and get back ourselves back into the game. But it just kept repeating, let's keep doing what we're doing.
See, this is the thing as well, right? If your midfield is on top, then the keeper can go out, like, maybe as far as the 45, clog up a lane or two. But, like, Jason McGee was absolutely brilliant throughout the game. Like, he was the dominant midfielder. Donegal were on top in midfield. And so, if you're saying, you know, if it's 70-30 that Rodgers and Glass are going to keep being dominant in midfield on kickouts, then have Oran Lynch there, and you can really, that's you putting the squeeze from an advantageous position. But if you're getting beaten at midfield, then it's just completely kamikaze stuff. And again, this is the thing. You've made the point twice already, but how you don't change it when it's your midfield is getting beaten. Whatever about the first goal was just a really unlucky break. I mean, I think the break actually came from Brendan Rodgers that Donegal got onto. So, I mean, okay, fair enough. That can happen. You can get caught out in that respect. But if you're losing the midfield battle, if you're getting hammered, what is he doing out there?
Yeah, and this goes back to the theory. This was such a strength for Derry's.
These balls,
was it kind of overconfidence? Was it like hubris on Mickey Hart's part to be like, I'm not changing, we're not changing, this has worked for us and we're just going to stick with it?
Well, that's exactly, Kieran, what happened. This has worked, and not only worked so incredibly well for us. You know, get that ball kicked out long on top of Glass and Rodgers and we will absolutely smash it back in. Ethan Doherty, Kieran McFaul, Paul Cassidy will pick up the breaks and we'll absolutely hammer through back through again. So there's a brilliant high behind for the first goal, behind the goals, if people want to watch back on it. Ball kicked long out on top of that one, which you said it was Rodgers and Keenan McGonigal. But it was Ryan McHugh and Darrell Boyle coming running in underneath the breaking ball. And the three Derry half forwards were kind of trottering back from the half forward and expecting a big, massive break from Rodgers. And if they had it, this is the fine lines, if Rodgers did get that big break, it goes into Kieran McFaul, and Darrell Boyle and Ryan McHugh are away that way. Derry are going the other way, but all of those things just happened for Donegal, and they didn't happen by chance. They, I'm telling you, were worked upon constantly, I would imagine, from last October onwards. They would have got a glimpse of it again in the McKenna Cup of what Derry were trying to do. They would have taken a lot from that. But yeah, that ability to just say, for Derry to say halfway through the concession of two of those goals to say, right, hold on, this isn't working, let's take our medicine, let's even drop off, do you know what I mean? Let's get them short, and you can bet your bottom dollar Tyrone next week, Tyrone will not be pressing. They will be dropping off that kick out, they'll be giving it short, and they'll be saying, Donegal, try and break through this, you know?
Yeah. So where do Derry go now, do you think? Right, because like I think we even talked about it briefly a couple of weeks ago when Malachy Clerkin had written a piece saying Derry should just like throw their hat at the Ulster Championship, take a break now for 5 weeks. I mean, there are ways to lose to Donegal that are less damaging to, I suppose, like their core principles as a team. But, you know, maybe Derry can wake up this morning and say, right, okay, that was bad, but we've got 5 weeks now or 4 weeks before the group stages. We can turn it to our advantage. But that's a much harder argument to make when, as you say, your hammer has been hammered by a team like Donegal coming to your home ground and kind of humiliating you in ways.
Yeah, listen, Derry were going to win that game. They wanted to get three in a row in Ulster. There's no way about it. As you sit here now, you know, a couple of days later, you say to yourself, right, where are Derry? Derry, it was all about winning the All-Ireland this year for Derry. Winning another Ulster, would it have classified success? I'm not so sure. One in the National League, which is the one and only one in that, would it have classified? Would it be classified as success at the end of the season? I don't know. It's about one in the All-Ireland. So you look at the path for them now. It's six games. It's three games in the league. stages of the Super 16, and it's quarter final, semi final, final. The other way, it would have been nine. It would have been Donegal. It would have been Tyrone as it played out. It would have been Armagh before they even hit the All Ireland series. So that's not a bad thing for Derry. Okay, they can get to go away. The Glen boys get a bit of recovery. Everybody's playing this for this one. And Mickey Hart has... There's going to be a bit of pressure there too. Do you know, the murmurings around the appointment, should he have been, should he have been there, going to intensify now over the 6 weeks. And Derry, you can be probably quite sure of that.
Yeah, I always felt with that maybe, you know, if he was to lead them to an All-Ireland, then, you know, Derry fans would probably have to suck up that Mickey Hart's the man who...
Yeah, there is no honeymoon period.
But as soon as things start going wrong, like a lot of people in the county just did not want this guy managing their team.
No, and that's it. And listen, that weekend, this last weekend is going to really, they're going to be, this is going to echo so strongly until that first game. They're going to be seeded three. They're going to have to go and travel to likelihood Kerry or potentially Dublin again. And can they suffer another defeat? Can this team suffer another defeat with the crash and low? I'm not so sure they can within the Super 16 if they're to go on and win an All-Ireland.
You were tipping them up a few weeks ago, Michael. Listen, you had them down as your Ireland champions.
But hear me out. Mickey Hart has previous in this of picking certain Tyrone teams up from first round exits and provincials and going on mazy runs. And this Derry team still do have ability. They have ability to regroup, to get back on the horse again and to still challenge. And just the other reason why I do still think that they will challenge is just the other competitors around the country. Dublin are there, yes, but the rest of them, there's just no other real standout competitors that are around there, and that just keeps Derry in the conversation for me, you know.
What about Donegal then? Next up is Tyrone. As you're saying, Tyrone have now been warned, but it's hard to know with them. They just look so, even within one game, they seemed very inconsistent against Cavan.
Yeah, it was up to the game, and they were really good in the first half. Really loud, like this Derek Canavan is like a little rubber bundle. Like he jumps into players and out of players, to the ground, up off the ground, and then he finishes. Like first couple of years he's been playing, I think he's been that creative force who used to win a few frees or offload ball. Now he's become an absolute deadly assassin. Kicked 7 points yesterday, 5 from play, and you're like, it's just normal now. Like, that is a ridiculous scoring return in a Ulster Championship game. I don't care who it's against. So he's there. Matty Donnelly, Niall Morgan, Michael McKiernan, they look like elder statesmen. They look like these 40-year-olds managing a group of young players who are, by the way, the young players are extremely energetic, but they're just so young, it's hard to figure as a Tyrone team. But I would subscribe, and it's not me with my Donegal hat trying to play the violin here now ahead of this weekend's game. Going through that 90 minutes with that young group, I think will give that group serious belief to say, we went to the well, we went there strongly, we went together, and you know what better way to set up ahead of Donegal this weekend. So yeah, Tyrone are maybe not as noticeable. You look at Peter Hart, Con Kilpatrick, they're big players that are out at the moment. Frank Burns, you know, you're waiting to see, you know, Conor Myler, where are they? They come back into that Tyrone team, it's a completely different team, but is the turnaround to next week too short for them? I'm not too sure, but it's all the making. Celtic Park again, you know, it's going to be a packed house, it's going to be a good one next Sunday.
You know, you kind of have to give a lot of credit to Cavan in this game as well, because it was the sort of obdurate thing that you expect from Cavan. You know, that just that idea that they're never gone, particularly in Breffni Park. I mean, the game was done. It was they were a beaten docket, and then out of nowhere to come back in the manner that they did. They actually deserve a lot of credit as well. I mean, it was so much fun to watch. It was such a fun game to watch. And, you know, like the Ulster Championship could deliver two such hilarious games, like genuinely laugh out loud hilarious games 2 days in a row is kind of outrageous.
You know what, fun, I never described that, but now that you say that, well, that was yesterday. We were down pitch side watching myself, Austin, we're on Philly McMahon, and you were down watching it, and it was fun. There was goals going in, there was mistakes being made. Tyrone were up by 6 at half time on 10-1-4, and you're saying to yourself, they're going to kick on. What Cavan had introduced to the game is a little bit of chaos and just something different. And Tyrone actually helped them do that. Tyrone went really, really lateral and careful and safe and held the ball in their own defence of 45 quite a lot. That forced, you know, Cavan to go up and have a cut at it, you know, and Cavan didn't do that. They went up and had a cut, they had a press. They won a couple of balls off a press. The crowd got behind them, and then they got the goals. They got really opportune goals, balls into the square, balls being flicked out by Morgan, and they got the goals that they needed to bring themselves back into the game. And it just looked like momentum going into extra time. It was only with one team, and that was Cavan, but Tyrone just found a way. And yeah, listen, I think it's one that Cavan will be really, they'll be proud in terms of how they got back into the game and the grit that they showed. But I think they'll look back towards the latter stages of normal time and especially extra time and say to themselves, geez, that was one that really we could have went on and won, you know.
You said earlier that nobody outside of Dublin is really standing up so far. I mean, you're always interested to see what Kerry are going to do early in the championship, and they had a lot of trouble caused against them by Cork, didn't they?
Yeah, listen, it's Kerry are probably always have their sights set. There's probably the three teams, if you look at it, Kerry, you know, Dublin and Derry kind of were the three to me that say it's all Ireland or nothing, you know, that type of way. And sometimes when them three teams maybe have that in the back of their head, you know, provincials, not that they become less important, but the players are thinking we're in this to July, you know, we're here for another, what are we in now, April, May, June, July, we're in this for another 4 months. So all of a sudden the immediate next couple of weeks don't become the be all and absolute end all. And as a result, you know, Dublin's performance last week, some people picked small holes in it. Kerry's performance this week, you know, people definitely pick holes in it. Derry's performance will pick holes in it. And that comes with all Ireland scrutiny, and that was the point I was going to make with Derry, and we can make it with Kerry too. When you're in that bracket of being an All-Ireland challenger, we are all looking at it now through All-Ireland lenses and saying, do they have the cornerbacks to do man-marking challenge? Do they have the kick-out strategy? You know, do they have the consistency across 70 minutes? You know, do they have the scoring forwards? And whether that's against Cork, or whether that's against Donegal, or whether it's against, you know, me in the first round, it doesn't matter. We're going to look and judge them based on, are they All-Ireland contenders? And everybody expects them to be in All-Ireland form every single day they go out. And that's just not always the case or the chance. So Kerry got the business done. You know, Cork come close, but still can't really get over that line and the hoodoo of it, you know. So Kerry will be happy enough to get through it and they'll push on, you know.
Yeah, and I suppose if you're looking at it through that All-Ireland lens, you're looking at Kerry saying they got ran at, they didn't really enjoy it. The full back line without Jason Foley is going to be something that teams will target as well, even if Paul Murphy was very good back there for them. And that's kind of the thing, you know, like Sean O'Shea was really, really good. But again, it was not a statement performance by Kerry. And maybe that kind of brings teams like Donegal or Armagh or that into conversations where, you know, you're kind of looking at you know, Dublin don't usually allow you to think, God, you know, on a bad day you can catch them. Like with this Kerry team, you know, a lot of teams aren't that, you know, at their best they can be brilliant, but a lot of teams can beat them if they're not at their best. And Cork nearly did on Saturday.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair assumption. Like, you know, you definitely can pick holes within the Kerry team, but let's face it, now they're going to cruise Munster, likelihood, no disrespect to any other teams, and they're going to get a home, you know, a first seeded rank in the Super 16. So I think the bigger challenge is for them is just how they navigate from the quarter final inwards then in the All-Ireland. But yeah, you definitely can pick holes. I think, you know, when you have that All-Ireland lens on a team like we do with Derry, Kerry and Dublin, I think I always, with the Kerry side, I always think the reason why, you know, we're comparing them against other Kerry sides and we're comparing them against all, like, you think to yourself, who, if you're picking an All-Ireland 15 here now at the moment, how many Kerry players get into it? You know, and you're down at probably, I'm down at probably three, you know, that are getting into it. And sometimes for them All-Ireland real contenders, you're needing to, like, you think of Dublin, you're probably up at, I would say, double that, up towards seven, you know. So it's when you only have those maybe three. And the support cast, I still have question marks over Kerry big time in terms of that spread of scorers, spread of key man markers. Now that you mentioned with Jason Foley out, I do have question marks that they can be got at, But let's face it, over the last few years, they've navigated their way to All-Ireland. You know, they still have found a way to get there. It's like that one, what's the one we always say, when the championships are always wide open, just back for a Kerry Dublin final.
But I noticed you haven't put any, either the Connacht, the big guns in Connacht, into your All-Ireland shake-up there, Michael. Nothing that you saw from Galway or Mayo, I guess, was going to rattle your cage over the weekend.
Murph and Galway, we're going to have a big sit down and a chat here to try and figure out the they got a lot of their players back, didn't they? They had a lot of their
Shane Walsh started and Damien Comer came on. Damien Comer had a much bigger influence on the game than Shane Walsh had. I mean, one very good point from play aside by Shane Walsh, he looked rusty, you know. And I think, see, this was the thing, I think, with Galway as well. That so many people were like, okay, once you get the players back, then all the questions are answered. But the players have to come back and they have to play themselves up to championship pitch. And I think that is the big concern for Galway, that you might be able to get them onto the pitch. You know, you might, like, rush them back. And again, like, the situation yesterday was Damien Comer is named on the bench. Like, the big thing from Galway's perspective would surely have been, let's beat Sligo without having to play Damien Comer, maybe when he's not... I mean, if he was fully fit, he'd have started the game. So he comes on, he has to kick two massive points. He wins the turnover. He forces the goal that wins the game in injury time to steal a win that Galway did not deserve by all accounts. And that's the problem. You know, like how is Damien Comer's body better today than it was last Friday when the team was named? You couldn't say that. So that's the big problem for Galway.
Yeah. But it's coming to a stage now, Murph, like, you know, where they need, and you've brought up two really good, it's coming to a stage now in the season, you have to run you have to throw the dice. And it's not, people say, leave it be until the Super 16s, leave it be for another few weeks yet. You brought it up. This team needs, it's not just about getting them all back and putting them out on the pitch together for a championship game. They need cohesion to play together and actually getting Comer and no way be washed but off form. Getting them through them amount of minutes on a championship pitch will actually be of big help to them. It might mean for the first two games that it just mightn't be all rosy in the garden with them, but hopefully come game three and game four, which is likely going to be the Super 16s, there'll be a bit of cohesion, they'll have a little bit more of an understanding of, because it takes a while to get into the championship field. It takes a while just to get into the swing of things again. Let's face it, these players haven't got into the swing of things in many league games, never mind getting into a championship game. So they had to, I do believe, probably just they had to throw the dice if they're ready. They had to get them in there and get them just as a team back to using. Yeah, he's playing up there. I'm going to get used to kicking the ball to him again, because you can't just turn that on like a tap come the latter stages in All Ireland, you know.
Yeah, and no John Maher, no Cathal Sweeney, who I think is going to be a big player for Galway as the championship progresses. So as you're getting these guys back, there's also other injuries that you need to manage. But at least Maher and Sweeney played in the league, so they have some minutes this year. I mean, the Mayo game yesterday, the impression I'm getting from Mayo people is that they still have a ton of questions, like around their midfield, which would have been an area that they would have dominated Galway in for the last probably 10 or 12 years. They still have massive questions around that. And you know, from a position maybe in January, if you were picking the likely All-Ireland winners, you'd have put Galway and Mayo in a bracket with Derry. And even with what happened last Saturday, Galway and Mayo are still, I think, in many people's books, a good way away from what is now a top three. And nothing really we saw in Roscommon yesterday. I mean, it was such a kind of it was a more lethargic game than either of the two Ulster games that we saw this year. A much cagier game, actually, than either of the two Ulster Championship games this weekend.
Yeah, listen, Mayo, you say there they had questions around the midfield. Like, let's face it, over the last 15 years, Mayo had questions all the time, and they seem to revel in these questions. You know, whether it was about their full back line or their lack of scoring forwards, now it's towards that middle area of the field. So, I don't. No, we've got marquee forwards, too open in the back. So, like, these questions always raise it. Mayo seem to revel in this, you know. And listen, they'll keep doing what they're doing, but do they have the consistency? Like, the All Ireland, the way it's set up now, in terms of the Super 16, the three games and the quarter-final semi, you need an element of real strong consistency. And I just don't know if Mayo have that ability. They can cause a shock. You could see them causing a shock 100%. Quarterfinal, even semi-final stages, or in Super 16, a shock against a Kerry or a Dublin, no bother. But I just don't know, do they have the consistency then to push on with that?
So if there were six games played this weekend and all six of them were duds, we'd probably be sat here asking if this was the death of Gaelic football. So we should do the opposite. Yeah. Because
can we do a hurling on it now? Can we just absolutely wax
incredible.
Lyrical?
I saw,
the greatest field sport in the world.
I saw Liam Sheedy tweeting this morning. RT had tweeted 30 seconds of Limerick Clare, and it was just like, we should all take a moment this morning to thank the players for the incredible entertainment. I was just like, what Gaelic football analyst would ever write these words? It's just absolutely brilliant. But it was so much fun this weekend. What did you see this weekend, or maybe in the last couple of weeks? Because I'll give you my example that made you think, right, actually things are moving in the right direction. And the thing that I saw over the last couple of weekends that I just found really thrilling was actually Armagh's first 30 minutes against Fermanagh. I was watching it thinking, if this is the next 10 years of Gaelic football, how good would that be?
What would they do?
So Armagh just absolutely went after Fermanagh.
Yeah.
Every kick out was a contested kick out. When Fermanagh went short, 8 Armagh players straight up into the full forward line and just ripped them of possession, turned over, were ruthless in front of goal, got the 3 goals, killed the game off. Now, if that's the next 10 years of Gaelic football, it would be an incredible sport to watch. Will big teams do that against each other? I don't think so. But that was the one thing that I've seen in the first couple of weeks that I genuinely got excited about and said, okay, Gaelic football is changing here. And that would be an amazing change that I would like to see. How did you see anything else other than that you've kind of seen as a pattern in the last few weeks that would get you excited about maybe the next 5 years?
Yeah, firstly on that one, I was at the game. It's a bleak, freezing cold, mizzly day in Brister Park with about 4,000 to 5,000 people, and I was there and it was dreary. And it's like, Jesus, what Armagh are we going to see? And we're just so used to seeing from 2 weeks ago that National League performance and standoff and playing very slow and thought, and next thing, the first 20 minutes, they just, as you say, they ripped onto it. Now, listen, you could take massive holes within the Fermanagh's ability to try and work the way around it, but I just remember getting up while we're up in the corner. I remember getting standing up and off the seat and saying, "Jeez, this is brilliant." They were up and tacking 45, poor Fermanagh defenders coming out with the ball, and they were just ripping ball off them and transitioning up the field. They got their couple of goals. They put the game to bed and game was over by half time. I remember saying it at half time on air and being really energetic, and I don't think the energy was really reverberating around anywhere else, but I remember just saying it and saying, this is the Armagh we come to see. But yeah, seeing that, a little bit more kicking of them, right, Murph? Seeing in the Tyrone the Tyrone Cavan game, yes, there was just a couple of balls starting to go to the square. There's a couple of balls from defence to attack. There's a small bit more kicking, a small bit more, is it a pattern? I'm just not so sure. But listen, at times that high press, I don't know how much we're really going to see of it. The keeper is playing a huge point in this, in terms of when teams press, the keeper is just becoming the handy out. It's just becoming easy out, and there's no value on the teams to press because the keeper gives that out. So I don't know how much we will definitely see of it coming down the track. I think it'll be used, but used occasionally rather than used for a full game.
Just on the keeper issue though, because that's sort of dominated everything, is our teams going to be more circumspect now about how they use their goalkeepers outfield? Is there a way of continuing the trend of what we've seen without exposing yourself like Derry did at the weekend?
Yeah, I think so. I think teams will still use it. It's just too big. Just from that point, the more bet that when teams press, hey, man to man, you need to have your keeper there in general play. You need to have him there just as that outlet. Kev McStay after yesterday's game, don't know if any of you heard him, spoke brilliantly around it, very honestly, fair play to him. He just said, listen, he's the plus one. He's going to help us get out of defence, and we're building up play with the ball. Teams are still going to use it. For kickouts, I think teams potentially will still use it, but only use it for a, you know, that hopefully try and not have their keeper competing, just use it as a deterrent not to kick to there. But maybe what we will see is more of the Sean Patton-esque and more of the Jim McGuinness-esque of just rain it down on top of you and make you compete. We might see a little bit more of that, you know.
I think that's the big thing, because it's two separate things. Like the goalie will always be the backstop, the out ball. I think that's not going to change unless a rule comes in. But the kick out thing, like what I found so interesting was kick it towards Lynch, make him compete, beat him, and then it's wide open, you know. So I think that they're like, if a keeper comes out now, I think the keeper should be expecting to get some ball being kicked his way. And you have to, like, so many people have said this in the past about Shane Ryan. Well, you know, Shane Ryan's a great club player. You know, he can play outfield. It's like, a lot of us are good club players. That doesn't mean you can go out and, like, outfield, you know, Jason McGee or, the intercounty midfielders are intercounty midfielders for a reason. And the fact that you're a good club outfield player does not mean that you can go out there and compete. It actually means you're a massive weak link and expect to be exposed in place in situations like that. So I think that is a thing that if you're brave enough to send the keeper out, I would say that keeper should gear up to be targeted, you know?
There's one goalkeeper in the game that can do that, and in my opinion, I'd be confident doing it. That's Neil Morgan. Like, he has the athleticism of an outfield player, but let's face it, the rest of them do not have the athleticism of outfield players to take the ball into traffic. Like, Neil Morgan could run at you and whiz by you. He has that athleticism of an outfield player in the pace to do it. Just on the one about maybe trends, maybe now that we do say it, the two games that I've watched at the weekend, the Cavan Monaghan game that I've seen, and just games I've seen, there is a move back to long kickouts, I think, to teams seeing the value of, like Donegal's, here's one, Donegal 3-3 off long kickouts. But if you look at percentage wise, very poor percentage, not very poor, poor in terms of elite teams. I think their percentage on their own kickouts was in and around 68-70%.
Yeah, 14 of 22, which is less than two-thirds. So 63-64%, something like that. Yeah.
So, like, I mean, if you were to
be given that stat without all the scores around it, you would say, Jesus, Derry did well in that kickout, didn't they? They did really, really well.
And Derry beat them on turnovers as well. Apparently. Yeah.
So are Donegal, so are teams seeing the benefit of just that risk reward of going long, potentially?
Yeah. Are you a designated driver again for Eamon McGee and the lads on Sunday?
I might try and wing my way around that one. I need to think about that. Good thinking, Owen. Need to start getting planning.
That's got to be your priority.
I would say avoid at all costs. I'm going to go ahead
It'll have to be one of the other four, because there's no more space.
Michael, brilliant. Thanks so much.
Thanks, boys.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Take your time there. Take your time. Take your time. Relax, relax. Now. Oh, what a pass. What a pass. What a reverse
Colin
pass.
Wheeling.
Go.
Wheeling,
go.
That's a goal for you, Didi.
Well,
Welcome to heaven, Willen. Welcome to heaven. Give him the ball on his feet. He will do the magic. Welcome to heaven.
Oh, he was amazing. He was amazing.
Welcome to heaven.
Willen, Willen, Willen. Fantastico.
Welcome to heaven.
Murphy must be watching on with envy as the rugby brigade sells out Croke Park in no time for Leinster's Champions Cup semi-final against Northampton on Saturday week. That's incredible. Pretty remarkable.
Absolutely incredible. You know, the GAA had two sellouts in Croke Park last year, both All-Ireland finals. That's it.
You know, when you start,
no other game sold out in Croke Park last year.
When you look at any social media post or whatever about such and such tickets selling fast, better get them soon, you're often eyes glazed over, you know. But then you're looking at the numbers in these social media posts, you're like, well, hang on, this sounds like quite a lot have been sold and there's only so much to... So yeah, the tickets were snapped up within hours of going on general sale on Friday after the EPCR heeded Leo Cullen's advice not to rip fans off with the pricing. So Leinster would have set the prices and done all of that ticket distribution off for the games before, up until, isn't that right, Simon?
Yeah, round of 16
and this, it changes at the semi-final. The EPCR, the tournament organisers, take it over. The way Leo Cullen was talking, he was concerned, there's only 20,000 people, 25,000 people, it's going to be a disaster kind of thing.
Leo, don't worry about it. That's just the GAA's flagship team, Dublin, playing in their home ground.
What's
don't
Leinster
worry about
playing
it
there?
When it comes to Leinster, forget it. You can charge it whatever the hell they like.
There will be more than 82,000 supporters packed into Croker for what is now going to be a huge occasion.
The odds are heavily stacked in his favour.
Yeah. I have got bad news, though, for our beer-guzzling, rugby-loving friends.
It's a blizzard when they're out there, firing the pill, ruining the corner.
You think you're going to be traipsing up and down to the bar, dragging back trays of pints to your seat, making our lads get up off their seats 73 times a match. You've got another thing coming.
That's not how we roll.
I had to check Jerry's original article on this. I was like, was it 72 times? No, 73 times that gentleman had to get off the seat. Croke Park operates a match day policy whereby alcohol can only be consumed in the concourse areas. Supporters are not permitted to bring booze to their seats. We have contacted Croke Park Stadium Director Peter McKenna this morning to ask him if this is the same situation for the rugby in a couple of weeks. Peter probably had better things to do with his day, but nevertheless responded politely. Hi, Simon. And he says, yes, that's the way we set up for matches. Same for Hill 16. So... I'm afraid you're going to have to get
the greatest horseplay of all time.
Get your booze in pre-match. I mean, there is alcohol.
You can drink on the concourse.
Yeah, there are bars there, and you can have your drink, but you just can't bring it to your seats. So you're going to have to make. You're going to have to watch the feckin' rugby.
Yeah,
I know you all think you're going there for a big stag and hen do, but I'm afraid you're going to actually have to sit there and watch some rugby.
How long's the half? Anyway, it's like 20 minutes.
Because don't they close the bars during the game as well?
I think they do.
I believe that they do. So then you can't even just skip out and just go drinking at the bars. During the action is on.
I don't know.
Unbelievable stuff. So listen, this sport enjoy. This sport poison much chalice fun. There, that ticket.
This sport ain't much fun since I quit drinking.
Thanks for listening today. Thanks, Murph.
Thank you, Owen. Thank you, Ken.
Thank you, Owen, and thank you, Kieran.
Thanks again. We hope to see you on the World Service during the week. SecondGaps.com. Have a little look about signing up there. Why not? And also, just to mention that the Second Gaps podcast is part of...
the Acast Creator Network. Go on.
That's what he said.
That's the second time he's gone off. They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's world service.
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's the persuasion of the world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.